Welcome to another episode of the Big Pod Machine. Jason Williams alongside Inquirer Reds beat reporter Gordon Whitmire. He's coming to us from the road in Detroit today.
And, from beautiful Gordon, downtown Detroit, which is why we're not doing video today.
Which is why we're not doing video, and maybe why our audio sounds a little different today. But thanks for tuning back in and downloading the podcast. Great feedback so far. Hey, we are actually going to switch it up this week. We're going to go with our bleacher feature as our first segment here. And that's, of course, our bleacher feature for those just tuning in as we're in our, fourth episode. Fifth episode. Still early on here, obviously, in the Big Pod Machines days. But a bleacher feature is fan feedback, listener feedback, reader feedback. This is the segment where we take your emails. Sometimes you just take one. Today, I think we'll take maybe a few. But we wrote a column on Cincinnati.com this week, Gordon, in which we debate Joey Votto's future. And we got into it a little more than we did in the previous podcast episode, with the caveat that, hey, it's down the stretch now. Joey Votto is back. He came back with a bang on his 40th birthday on Sunday, hit a home run. And that really was the launching point for you and I to really dig in and really focus on his future. I believe the Reds need to move on, and Joey and the Reds need to move on. That's not a negative. That's not criticism.
And then you took
the other side that you think the Reds should bring him back. I would encourage folks, go to Cincinnati.com, read our column on that. We're not going to get back into that debate here today. But
let me just add this. You know, your side isn't necessarily a negative on Joey Votto. My side isn't exactly Pollyanna land either. My point is that if he's got anything left in the tank, if he finishes like he can play ball, bring him back. And so far, he seems to be healthy and strong.
Well, I think you made a good point in the column, and you make a good point here. If he does, he goes on a tear down the stretch here. I do think that that makes it more of an interesting decision. I think it's an interesting decision anyway. It's going to be a tough decision, I think, either way. But I think it's a little, like, if he doesn't, if he continues to kind of perform the way he's performed the last couple of years when he's been healthy, I think there's a strong argument for him not coming back. I do not want to get into that discussion again, because we just did that on the column. Again, go to Cincinnati.com, search Joey Votto, search my name, search Gordon's name. You can find that on there. You can go back a couple podcast episodes. We talked about it while Joey was, he was hurt right before he got hurt. We touched on some different things there. We want to do the bleacher feature here because we've had such a lot of feedback on this column, and we wanted to touch on that here in the podcast today. And our first email comes from D.T. Thomas, and he writes, what are the Reds' options on Votto if they pay him the $7 million? And again, so just to let folks, remind folks, the Reds, there's a club option. The Reds have to pay him at least $7 million, and that would be to go away, or they could pick up everything and pay him $20 million next year. So essentially, the Reds, if they let him go, they'd be saving $13 million. And then if they pick him up and bring him back, they're going to be paying him $20 million. But nonetheless, Joey Votto.
There's one more number to consider in here. He's making $25 this year. So even if you pick up the option, you're getting $5 million of a reduction in your payroll next year in that spot.
Or if you don't pick up the option, you're getting $28 million in savings next year. So D.T. Thomas writes, what are the Reds' options on Votto if they pay the $7 million? Can they let him become a free agent, then sign him for whatever amount of money if if he does not go elsewhere. Yeah. They have so many great options at first base and DH. Is it hard to justify, or this guy makes a statement, they have so many great options at first base and DH, it is hard to justify the money. But I think the question is what can they do? Obviously, they got to pan the seven, but then can they then renegotiate or negotiate with him on a lower salary night? Hey, Joe, we want you to come back. We don't want to pay you $20 million, but we'll give you the $7 million, obviously, that you're owed, and then we're going to give you another $3 million. Or does Joey have to then, is there some kind of rule where he goes into free agency over a period, or how does that work?
Yeah, the short answer to his question is, yes, you can do that. And the recent comp, one of the recent comps that I covered was John Lester, when he had an option year, a seventh year of a six-year contract. It was a club option. And the club bought it out for $5 million. And then Lester came back to the club and said, hey, listen, I'm fielding some offers. I'll come back to you on a discount. Give me $2 or $3 million and I'll come back. The Cubs wanted to move on completely, so they did. He signed a $5 million deal with the Nationals. So you could do that. You could come back to your club. And the example you used would make it basically a $10 million it would be a $10 million proposition for both sides. Joey would get the seven buyout, $3 million in salary. So he'd get paid $10 million and the club would be, you know, $10 million in payroll would be gone. So you'd get him at half price, basically. You could do that. On the open market, here's the thing about that though. Like, that's all going to be an in-house discussion. Unlike John Lester, John Lester was going to pitch somewhere. Joey Votto is probably only going to play in one place next year if he plays anywhere. So that's entirely an in-house conversation that probably gets had before anything's done with that option.
Gotcha. Good stuff on that. Our next email comes from, and some of these are just comments, but I think they're interesting to kind of get people's feedback on this, is from Don. And he says, a good guy, excellent player, hard worker and class act. Reds need to move on. The buyout is just another example of bad negotiating on a silly long-term contract. His $25 million range for the last 2 to 3 years could have gotten them a frontline pitcher that would have likely been the difference in making the playoffs this year.
Okay, I got something to say to that.
Say goodbye and spend the money elsewhere.
Here's the problem with that thought, and way too many people have that thought. It goes in with the assumption that by paying Joey Votto, you've locked up money that you can't pay somebody else. That's just simply not true. That's a salary they choose not to pay whoever else they're not paying. Joey Votto isn't preventing them. Take a look at their overall payroll. It's a bottom four payroll in Major League Baseball. There's nothing preventing them this year, even last year, certainly going forward into next year, paying any three or four guys eight-figure contracts. You could do that, and you could do it within your revenue resources. So this idea that Joey Votto's preventing you from doing something is just a fallacy, and I don't know why that narrative's out there, but it's wrong.
Interesting. Our last Bleacher feature email, reader feedback, listener feedback, fan feedback. It comes from Joe in Liberty Township, and he says Votto's hitting .202 for the season and .179 after the All-Star break. There are many reasons to say goodbye, Joey. They are India, Strand, McLean, Steer, Marte, and De La Cruz, just to name a few, with more coming. There's simply put, no more chairs at the table. And I think this goes back to one of the points that DT Thomas, earlier reader, was making, in that you already have other options at first base. You have other options at DH. But What do you say to that, Gordon? And then I guess my question, kind of piggybacking off what Joe in Westchester says, is let's say they do bring Joey Votto back next year. What role does he play? Is he an everyday first baseman? Is he an everyday DH? Is he a little bit of both, or what? Yeah, what is he? Yeah, take it away.
Let's address the reader's question first. All those names that he listed as reasons for Joey Votto to go away, every single one of those unanimous would say bring him back because he's helped make us the players that we are. Now, that only goes so far. There's, you know, he's not stepping in the box for them and so on. But he has a value, and you can't, look, you can't bring him back just because he has a mentorship value. Bring him back as a coach then. But if he can play on the field, he also has a value in the clubhouse that is really hard to measure, especially when you've got a group that young. So I wouldn't be quite so dismissive just because there's all this talent coming. He has been, by all accounts, part of their success. Now, as for going forward, where you would play him, let's start from the premise that all these guys that have debuted this year have a lot left to prove. None of them have established themselves as everyday big leaguers. I would say McLain is probably as close as it's come. Dale Cruz has tons of tools. I mean, the guy does things just by showing up that are exceptional. As long as he keeps his head in the game, fielding doesn't slump, speed doesn't slump, and he does, and his arm is amazing. All those things would play every day, but he's got an enormous strikeout rate, and it's hard to imagine playing him every day if he doesn't do something about that. He's got growth left in him for all the great things that he does. Noelvi Marte's got a long way to go to prove himself as an everyday player. I like what I've seen the last couple of weeks. And Christian Encarnacion Strand, again, he's got nice, easy power when he connects, but he's has not established himself. So going forward, to bank on a lot of these young players might like and expect them all to perform and be part of a core is probably asking too much. Historically, it almost certainly is asking too much. I don't think there's any logjam created by bringing Joey Votto back for a year. And I don't think he would ask for more than that. I don't think anything more than that is necessarily reasonable. So you could play him. You could play him. You could rest him against lefties. That's kind of what they did when he first came back this year is pick lefty starters to rest him against and kind of rotate him out of the lineup. You could do a little bit of that next year, and you just base it on his performance. If he's raking, you leave him in there. If he's struggling against lefties or not catching up to things or whatever, you put him, you play him against the matchups that make sense. But he can certainly, if he's healthy and looks next year like he does now, he would be playing next year at 40, not 41, 42, 43. So I know he just turned 40, but he's in great shape. If he finishes strong, looks healthy next year, he can contribute. And there's a place to play him.
Okay, good. Let's shift into our what's usually our first segment. That's, you know, we pick a couple topics and discuss. But I thought you had a really good piece, a really interesting piece, and where you kind of looked at the race as we, you know, head into, you know, just over two weeks left in the season, as you come to us from Detroit, and you had a dispatch, so to speak, from Detroit, in which you raised the question: is the American League about to determine half the National League playoff field in the next 3 weeks? What do you mean by that?
Well, number one, I think it is, and number two, it's this is the first year where everybody plays everybody in the other league. Interleague isn't just one division against another division this year. You get everybody for at least three games. So that's 46 interleague games. And it just so happens that this year you've got six teams as we record this podcast separated by five games total in fighting for the three wildcard spots in the National League. And that could swing in a week. I mean, any one of those teams, one series could swing their playoff hopes. And while a couple of them, like the Phillies and the Cubs, are done with their interleague play, the Reds have, as we record, well, put it this way, three of their last six series of the year are interleague series. Arizona, which went into Tuesday, or I'm sorry, went into Wednesday with small, like a half game lead for the last wildcard spot, finishes the season with nine straight American League games at New York, at Chicago, and at home against Houston. That's a hell of a stretch against just good teams in general. But the fact that those nine American League games could have an outsized influence on the National League playoff picture is just really, it's fascinating to me. And so, yes, I think American League games ultimately are going to determine at least a couple of National League playoff spots this year.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you, because usually, I mean, well, let me ask, like, don't fans want to see, you play a division rival down the stretch, the Reds, for example. And again, I did this, you play somebody in your division. The Reds happen to be playing the Cardinals in the last series. But don't you think fans want to see their favorite team playing someone in their division in that last series, if not that last entire week?
Yeah, I mean, you would think, right? Or at least if, or maybe even just in your own league, so that in this case, you know, if you had the Diamondbacks down the stretch, or the Giants, or the Marlins, or the Phillies, or the Cubs, and the Cubs are in the same division, obviously, those are teams that you're going to wind up battling for a playoff spot against, and certainly the ones in your division you're battling for a playoff spot against. Obviously, that's not the case ever for an American League team, but yes, and that's the way it used to be, which is why this came up this year, actually. One of the reasons that we have this strange-looking schedule down the stretch this year as National League tries to sort out a really jammed-up playoff field is that when the decision was made to go to this new interleague format last year into this year, they had already mapped out league schedules for 2 years, this year and next year. And so rather than tear those up and start over, and biggest reason for that is that once those got released, local teams began to make commitments for the, and the cities wound up making commitments for their facilities and just events in town based on the fact that the team was there or not there. So, so now you've got a complication within any number of localities if you go to start all over again. So what they did was they just used the existing schedules as templates and laid over the new schedule. So they plucked out what amounts to eight series, right? So you play everybody in your division now four times each instead of six times each. Mm-hmm. So four opponents, two series, eight series total from every schedule got plucked out. And then it got replaced by interleague. Well, mm-hmm. I presume some level of manipulation where it was available to be made. And so what happened is you get a disproportionate number then of interleague games in some cases down the stretch because that would have been division games. I would imagine, I don't know what the original schedule was for the Diamondbacks, for instance, but I would imagine there was a steady diet of Giants, Dodgers, maybe Rockies for that last nine games instead of what's now all American League opponents. So we've got another year to deal with that before they start fresh. And I would imagine starting in 2025, you're not going to see this scenario again, even if a playoff field is bunched up.
I thought that was funny in your story. Reds reliever Derek Law said, quote, "It's almost like PlayStation or something fake like that, that an AL team could just help or hurt an NL team." Just weird.
What was funny is I talked to a number of guys, and like Luke Maley, if you ever met Luke Maley, you know, he's a catcher. He thinks things out. Like I know you have. But he's a smart guy. He's always trying to think ahead. This had occurred to him. He looked at the schedule and saw this. So when I talked to him about it, he had some thoughts already. Derek Law, it hadn't even occurred to him. And so he's going, "Oh, that's crazy. That's wild." And then, you know, I'm laying it out for him. He's going, "Oh, man." And I'm telling him the Diamondback schedule, and it's blowing his mind that, you know, the Astros might decide whether the Diamondbacks get in the playoffs or not.
Yeah, and even just, you know, thinking about the Reds, like they have, as they finish up the Detroit series, but still two more interleague series to play, against Minnesota at home, and then a two-game series in Cleveland in that last week of the season, right before they go to St. Louis to finish up the season, or the regular season anyway. I totally agree with you that they've got to make those tweaks, because I guess unless there's that rare occasion where it could be a potential, you know, World Series preview.
Well, there's always, you know, because there's 15 in each league, it's unavoidable. You're going to have somebody playing. You're always going to have at least one interleague series
going. So then someone's always going to be finishing this. Correct. So yeah. Someone's always going to be finishing the season with an interleague series. And I guess there will be times, or maybe there will be times, that if that's like a prelude to the World Series, and, you know, the Guardians and the Reds playing in Cleveland that last series, you know, two young teams, up and coming teams. Obviously, the Guardians took a step back this year, but you know, if that series were a couple years down the road from now, maybe that's a preview of a potential World Series matchup. And, you know, yeah. I know I'm kind of dreaming big here, but what I'm trying to say is that it's not all bad.
It
potentially isn't all bad.
Well, I'll throw two thoughts onto that. One is, I think you're right. I think there will be some intention in how the season finishes interleague-wise. There's two ways to look at that. One would be what you said, you know, where you put a marquee matchup down there at the end. The other way to look at it is try to anticipate who's maybe not competitive so that it doesn't impact any playoff races, any potential wild card races. So you try to get the least impact on playoff races as possible down the stretch. That'd be the other way to look at it. And I'm sure some fans are thinking this, everybody plays everybody else. The schedules are roughly equal when it comes to interleague play. So yeah, nobody's saying there's anything patently unfair about this. There's nothing unfair about the way these schedules are rushing. It's just that we're down now to the games where any series could eliminate somebody or put somebody in. I mean, we're not quite there yet, but by the time the Diamondbacks start that stretch, we could be there. And so it's just odd, and it's conspicuous, and it has the feeling of being very impactful, where if the same thing, I mean, the games would count the same if these all happened in April, you know, you got to play them somewhere. We just wouldn't notice it quite as much, and it wouldn't be the headlines that it might make if the Astros knocked the Diamondbacks out of the National League playoff picture.
Just one of many changes that baseball fans have to get used to. Still, there's a lot of new things in the game, and that's one of them, getting used to. Heck, I even made a mistake in a column earlier this year in which, you know, it was when the Yankees came to town. you know, I wrote about, could this, I think you and I talked about it even, could this be a look at a future World Series matchup? And I didn't even reference in there, you know, that they rarely, you know, they only play them every so often. And then someone pointed out, you know, hey, that rule changed and they're going to be playing the Yankees every year now, whether it's here in New York.
Yeah, up until this year, you only saw him.
Right. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was just kind of one of those things that, you know, I knew that was happening, but it was like I brain farted and next thing you know, and it's just something you got to get used to that now your team is going to play every team in baseball. And interleague play has essentially been expanded.
Yeah.
Not essentially, it has. So good and stuff. By the way, go ahead.
You want to know how this impacts the Reds? You want to handicap the Reds within this framework?
Absolutely. So
the Reds are now, after Tuesday's extra inning win in an American League game in Detroit, they are one game out of a playoff spot with 16 to play. Okay, so they've got seven American League games left. Those are against Detroit, Minnesota, the only winning team left on their schedule, and Cleveland. None of those are juggernauts. Minnesota's going to the playoffs, but you know they're in the worst division in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. And by contrast, you know, we've laid out a little bit of the Astros. They got those nine all at the end, including defending World Series champ Houston in the last three and a trip to the Bronx. Even though the Yankees aren't what they have been in recent years, that's still a tough place to go in and try to win. And then you've got the White Sox on the road. The White Sox are terrible this year, but if you draw Dylan Cease in that series, then you know, he can beat anybody on any given day. And all of a sudden there's a game off your schedule that's a loss. So, you look at that, the team that they're behind is the Diamondbacks. And all they have to do is tie the Diamondbacks because they have the season series tiebreaker against them. So they make up that one game on the Diamondbacks and they've caught them. So, you know, there's still Miami in the picture and the Giants in the picture. You know, the Cubs have a few games on all those teams. But they could come back to the pack anyway. But if you're looking at the Diamondbacks, it should be an advantage. And one other factor, Hunter Renfro brought this up. They brought him in off waivers from the Angels. They brought Harrison Bader in off waivers from the Yankees. These are guys that were in the American League all year. Renfro brought it up unsolicited. He said, the one advantage we have is I know a lot of these pitchers. I know a lot of these teams and these pitchers' tendencies. I might be able to help. I might be able to help with being prepared against teams that most of the team might not have seen. And so there's that too. So good. You kind of got to, if it does come down to this, you got to like the Reds' advantage within that. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, great stuff. You know, unique angle. You're always looking for those different angles as you cover baseball, which, you know, that's what you have to do when you're covering baseball, looking for all these different angles to keep it interesting. And certainly this Reds team, we've talked so much about it that, you know, what's going to keep them from yanking the playoffs? They're still in it and they may ultimately end up making the playoffs. So sit back and
it's about pitching, man. Do they have enough pitching?
And Williams is back from
the COVID list. Green's back from the COVID list. You saw what they're doing with Andrew Abbott, right? They're going to space him out. He's going to pitch probably on his seventh day next time around. And then they'll give him extra rest. Then he's got three starts left, but they're really trying to space him out, hoping to squeeze the most out of him because of his workload as a rookie. He's already 35 innings over anything he's ever pitched in his life. Simpson's another rookie. And then from there, I mean, Connor Phillips making a start Wednesday in Detroit, second career start. I mean, geez, you know,
talking about getting creative and, finding just different ways to get things done.
The good thing for them is they've got more days off down the stretch than anybody. And I was looking at it with a Reds employee yesterday. We were looking at the last eight games. They might be able, depending on how they line it up, they might be able to go with four starters on regular rest in those last games. So that would help a lot if they don't have to scramble for more starting pitching.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, good stuff. Keep those emails coming. JWilliams@Inquirer.com. GWittenmeyer@Inquirer.com. A lot of great emails on the podcast, on the column. It's all feedback, and we see it all, and we take it all in. And so we want to let your voice be heard here on the podcast. Can't get to all of them on the podcast, but certainly, there's a lot of people that asked some of the same things on the that were addressed in the emails that we did read today. So keep those coming for the Bleacher Feature. JWilliams@Inquirer.com, GWittenmeyer@Inquirer.com. And Gordon, safe travels on the road. And we will see you when you get back to Cincinnati. Catch you next week.
Sounds good, J-Dub. See you then.